Hey everybody, AJ here. Just wanted to get out in front of this episode and say we had a few audio snafus while recording this episode. So there are varying levels of quality at a few points throughout this show. But the content of the show is still very good. So hopefully you can bear with us with that. Without further ado, here is the episode.
Everybody, and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. My name is Peter Bond. I've read every book in the main series. However, my co-hosts are reading the series for the first time. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Hello.
How you doing, Inge?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm really excited. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, me too. I'm feeling good. How's your Saturday?
What are we doing?
I thought it was just
casual.
I thought it would be because
casual.
Just checking in.
It was a gag. And yeah, with me is my producer of the show, AJ Flaherty. The kid's here.
Hello.
And last but not least, I found out recently on a Patreon episode he has a killer Scooby-Doo impression. It's Joshua Dean Baker.
That was only 2 weeks ago, and I've blacked out that memory. I don't remember doing that.
Well, it was incredible, and I just learned that the dude who does the Scooby-Doo voice nowadays has also been doing Fred for so long. Super crazy.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Anyway, with us today is a special guest. It's Books with Brittany. Welcome to the show.
Hello, welcome. Thank you guys for having me on.
Woo. First check, you know, I'm doing a great job here.
Cut all of that, AJ.
I just said welcome back to you.
I caught it, but I was like, no, I love it. I love this energy.
That's like classic me anyway, so I'm really okay with that. That's just who I am.
That's good. It's
a very chaotic show you've got this going, but listen, you know, Brittany has a YouTube channel. It's in our description. She's reading the book, she talked to Steve. I don't know. I guess in my mind, it's rather obvious. And it's like, of course, you know who Brittany is. But, you know, this is not my best intro, I got to tell you.
Yeah, Brittany, for those of you who don't know who you are, you just can give us a little rundown of the content you create, I suppose, and your journey with Malazan thus far.
Yeah. So I have the YouTube channel, Books with Brittany. I read mostly adult sci-fi fantasy for the channel. I read a little horror, some young adult, too. But in, I think, the end of 2019 is when I started reading Malazan. It was off to a rough start, and I'm continuing it, hoping to finish it this year. But I usually do like one book every other month, and I just finished The Bone Hunters in January. So in March, I'm going to be picking up Reaper Scale.
Very fun. I noticed you hit it with the Malazan, the way
Steve
did it.
Yeah, you got the correct pronunciations.
It's like every other time I say it a different way, and there's no rhyme or reason, but people argue with you all the time. And I think when I did the interview with Steven Erickson, I was like, you have to say Malazan. You have to say it right. But it still comes out Malazan half the time, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pronunciations on this show, you know, it's...
Famously, Pete never gets anything wrong and never doubles down for months at a time.
I've never doubled down. Anyway, we invited Brittany on the show. We're excited to have her on. We're going to wrap up Midnight Tides. Our read-through of the book's over. So we're just going to talk big picture thoughts about this whole book, answer a bunch of listener questions, and just to kind of blast through it. J-Bone, do you want to ask us this? Do you want to read this first question that came in for us?
Yeah, no problem. So, first question for our mailbag today comes from Chris L., who's got two questions. First up, I really enjoyed rereading along with you guys and seeing all the little clues about Bug, especially falling into the canal because he thought he heard his name in the scene directly following Withel praying to Mail. Do any of these stick out to you guys after just a first read? You want to do that question first?
I definitely didn't put that together, let the record show.
No, yeah, not in the slightest.
No.
I know Steve enough at this point to know that whatever the Bug reveal was going to be would be someone that we've heard the name of before, but I didn't think it would be a god, like a full-blown one.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
The canal thing's funny, though, you know?
It's really good. I love that. That's a really good catch. I kind of want to go back and read that.
I don't.
Yeah, I feel like this whole book on a reread is like just the whole time. They're like, hey, Bugs Mail. Hey, Bugs Mail. Hey, Bugs. Like, Pete, I feel like for you, it got annoying, maybe.
Steve is laying it on pretty thick a lot of the time.
He lays it on, right?
Yeah. He is laying it on pretty thick sometimes.
I really liked, we didn't talk about it much, but at the end of the book, when T'Hol's like, we really didn't eat anything for 8 years, that really got me. Because the whole book, I had been wondering, like, they really never eat real food. What's up with that? That's pretty great. And the second half of Chris's questions is, do you have any predictions for how or if the Lethra storyline will tie into the stories about the Malazans?
Inge, what do you think?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know the relevance, honestly. Everything that happens in these books, it just kind of happens to me, you know? I'm never expecting it. And I also have no idea, like, what's going to come next. So I've probably, there's my answer. I have no information to back that up. So, yeah.
Aj, what's your hot take?
I don't have a hot take. I think we will hear from Lether again, because I think it's pretty impossible to have like an undead god king and not be in the rest of these books, I think. But we'll see, I guess.
For the record, wouldn't call him undead. All right, Britt, I'm going to ask you this question. This one comes in from Das Bones. Dash Bones, maybe? I don't know. How would you feel recommending Midnight Tides as the first book in the series for someone to start to read? Not saying
what?
I recommend it, but curious what you think.
I've actually had a couple people tell me that they've started with Midnight Tides before. Yeah, some people's reading order is crazy to me, but I guess, I don't know. I just am a type of reader where, like, I kind of would trust the author, so I wouldn't recommend it that way. I would just go in the order of publication, because that's just generally what I tend to do. And I also feel like, I mean, I guess there's not really that many connections, but I did enjoy my time reading Midnight Tides with some of, even if it's just with the world building, like, I think some of it wouldn't have meant as much if it was the first book that I read. So I wouldn't personally recommend that, but I don't know if it would be bad to do so.
I get it. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a self-contained story in a lot of ways. You don't really need to know the first four books to really get this story. And I do think in a lot of ways it's a better written book than Gardens of the Moon. I do get how it's more approachable, right? But I don't think it's the book to start with. I don't know.
I really don't think it's the book to start with, because I feel like it means so much more having already met Troll, A. And B, you would be, I mean, you're already kind of confused with the Avowed and his whole gang of misfits, but at least you know there's other parts of the world when you get to this as book five, and you know anything about the Crimson Guard. Like, and they even talk about Malazan. Like, if that happened and this was your first book, you'd be like, well, that's the title of the series. I guess that's important. I don't know yet.
And it would be a weirder turn. It's already a weird turn, book five, to be like, all right, we're going to Letharis. You haven't heard of it. It's a different place. The Eater are there. But to start with it and then to leave it and not come back for several books.
If ever.
If ever. Thank you, Josh.
Nice. I mean, and even with the prologue of this book, like, it starts with you, the Eater and the Andy, being different people.
Oh my god, that would be a nightmare.
The Kachane Shamal is like, holy shit, what's happening?
Yeah.
Even more so than Guards of the Moon.
I loved the prologue, but at least you knew what the different, like, types of races were from the previous books.
Mm-hmm, you're like, you like, I get it. We're doing Tisty. We're doing ancient Tisty shit, you know?
Yeah.
All right, Aj, keep it moving. What's our next cue?
Okay. This next one comes from Kate Orlong on our Discord. To what extent do you guys think the Crippled God's involvement in this book influenced the Eater's journey? Oh, I mean...
Oh.
India, were you raising your hand or were you saying no?
No.
I think she was raising her hand too. Swat away the question.
I mean, I think, like, without the Crippled God, there's no sword, right? There's no Han and Mozag. So I mean, that's what's implied, I guess. So I feel like the Eater kind of would have just stayed this, like, semi-subjugated people without that, right? I don't really know.
There still would have been a war, but like they wouldn't have been led by an unkillable god king with an army of demons. So probably would have been a bit different outcome.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, because we don't even know fully the connection between Hen and Mozag and the crippled god.
Oh, yeah, like, we don't know how they met, like, or, like, how early. Because that's true. Was the crippled god the one leading Hen and Mozag to even unite the Eater in the first place?
Right, that's what I mean. Like, Hen and Mozag might not even be in charge by the time we get to, like, where we start Midnight Tides if the crippled god didn't get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so much stuff. Like, then that's what I'm saying. They would just, like, be in their valley or whatever, just, like, chilling for another X question mark amount of years.
Hmm.
I don't know, man. That's all I got.
I don't know. I mean, I know there's like a feeling in which it's like there's like a tangible sense that like, yeah, like there was like all this, you know, magic sword, blah, 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 blah. There's like a tangible sense to it. But like, I feel like if anything, it's like, no, like the crippled god had no effect. And like, if anything, is kind of more of a symbol of like the corruption, the rot of these people. Do you know what I mean?
I get that, but also the sword doesn't exist without the crippled god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, there's a physical aspect in which it's manifesting in the story, but, like, I don't know. If you took the whole crippled god element out of it, it really wouldn't change the story that much. Do you mean it's just, like, it's about, like, a people who get corrupted and, like, about, do you mean a fall? What, yeah. What, Josh?
Question. And what's corrupting them?
What's corrupting?
No, sorry, what? What's corrupting them, though?
What's corrupting them, Josh, is colonialism, money, expansion. It's all this stuff, you fucking piece of it.
Well, because the Warlock King would have still wanted power, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But where does his power come from, Brittany?
He would have tried to find it anywhere.
Yeah, that dude's ambitious.
But it's like, isn't it just...
What? I get what you're saying, that like the themes in the story of the general arc of the book like wouldn't change without the crippled god, but the question was kind of did the crippled god affect the Eater's journey?
Well, sure. Which in a physical way, yes. In this story, he gives them a magic sword. Yes, you know, so. Yeah, there's a magic sword in the book. Is that what you want me to say?
And access to his like Warren and all the demons.
Oh my god. I did want to shout out Kate Orlong post a bunch of great pictures of cats. Great cat pics from her, you know, just shouting out, you know.
Yeah, exclusive Discord content. You want to join our Discord?
Love the cat pics, you know? Love a good cat pic. All right, Ange, you want to read the next question?
Oh my God, Kate's cat is too good. I'm looking now.
It's really long. That's the thing about her cat. She's like, I have a long cat. It's just all these long... Oh, it's so good. Inch, hit it. Inch, bring the show back to Tuffy.
You guys go ahead. You guys finish.
No.
This question is from Erin, the queen of memes. A fun question for the crew. Inspired by Rulad. If you had to have one object stuck in your head forever, what would it be? Ooh. I already have an object stuck in my hand, and it's my cell phone. So
nice commentary.
Like society, man.
So my first thought is like I cook like every night, and so it would be convenient to already have a chef knife in my hand. But then I had to go through a whole life with chef knife in hand, and that's deadly. So I guess not.
My first thought was like trying genie it. Like, can I choose a gold bar and then sell the gold bar, but it's stuck to my hand. So.
I just want to choose something really small that doesn't hinder my daily activities.
Right.
That's smart.
Maybe like maybe just like the NFC chip from my credit card, so I can just like boop.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to, you know, so I can just like I can
That's
check
a
out.
Pretty
and
good idea.
That's really
thank
good.
You. Thank you. That's we're getting into some transhumanism here, but
that's what Bill Gates wants you to do, AJ. Watch out.
Shit.
I just want to shout out, someone also built on the question and said, what object do you want to get your stuck on your head, like Shirk in the book? So, pretty good.
That's really good.
I have no strong answer. Thought it was a fun question.
It's a very fun question.
I think having a big gem on your forehead is like a move, is a vibe, you know?
Sounds very anime.
Mm-hmm.
Very anime,
very
yeah.
Very anime.
All right. This email comes in from Tovio. Hi, I've really been enjoying the podcast since finding it this December, and I've been inspired to read more Malazan books outside of the main Erickson 10 and the pair of Esselmonts I've read. I only regret not being able to binge the second half of this podcast. It is a delightful way to think back, get more viewpoints, and reminisce about the Malazan world and all of the old favorite characters, including one of the most relatable characters in literature, Ubala Pung.
Thanks for the company. You left out the thanks for the company.
Thanks for the company.
I really appreciate this email. I feel like, Pete, when we started the show, we were kind of confused about, not confused about, but like worried that it wasn't going to catch an audience. Just because, like, sure. If people have already read the books, why would they want to listen to people read it for the first time?
This was something I thought for sure.
Yeah. And then also, like, how are people going to find it if they're reading it for the first time? So, I mean, an email like this, it's like, oh, I read the whole thing and I listened to the podcast. I don't know. And saying it inspired them to read more of the Malazan books. That's, you know, I don't know. That feels nice. That's great.
I agree. Yeah. Love a good friendly email. Warms the cuckolds of your heart, you know?
Yeah, and I do. The word is, that's definitely not
you
the
said
word.
Cuckolds, not cockles.
You said cuckolds of your heart.
That's the word.
It's cockles.
Cockles.
Anyway, I quickly wanted to derail the show completely.
Oh my God. Jesus.
Brittany, we were talking about, you just read Bone Hunters, and like we were talking because his thing was broke, about you had listened to the show a bit, right? And like, how would you feel? Man, totally derailing the show. But I think part of the reason I really loved Midnight Tides the first time I read it, right, was that I was so confused for the first couple of books. And then I got to this book and I felt like I'd really adjusted to Erickson's writing style and how he writes stories. And I was like, we're starting again from page one. I'm here for the whole fucking ride, you know? And like, It's a really good book too. So I feel like I was able to go there, go from A, B, C, D, E, and tell a whole story. And it was so, you know, I think it punched me in that gut in that way. How do you feel like, so I feel like, that's to touch back on the first question, I think part of that's the reason why it's kind of crazy to start reading this book like this. You know, I think it's well better written, but like half of the ball is also just learning how to kind of read this type of story in a way, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel like your reading of it is now, especially since you're past us and you're on to Bone Hunters, soon on to Reaper's Gale?
Oh, it's rough. So I think exactly like what you said, and I was actually just rewatching my reading blog for Midnight Tides before this because I read it in November. And I have said the same thing. Like, I knew the fifth book going in, I was fine with starting with a new cast of characters and location. I was like, okay, this is what we signed up for. Let's do it. But for some reason, I was still thrown off at the beginning. I think I couldn't connect to the plot of the story for the first like 20% or so. But I remember saying in that vlog that this was the book that I got to that I finally realized like how his books are meant to be read and that I didn't need to stress over every single little detail. And it helped talking to him about that and hearing him specifically say, you are not meant to catch every detail the first time you read it. Like, that's not what I was trying to accomplish with my book. And that kind of made me feel better about my reading experience because I would get stressed out thinking like, I am not piecing every single thing together that I need to or making all of these connections. At the same time, I struggle with it because I review the books for my channel and Malazan fans are hardcore. And so it's like the fear of like missing things or getting things wrong kind of puts stress on me while I'm reading it too. So I'm still trying to figure out a way to go forward and find a way that works for my reading enjoyment, but still allows people to get something out of watching my videos, I guess. But it's a complicated balance.
Ditto, I agree. I don't know, man. Like, just a whole, it's a thing. You know what I mean? Malazan fans, there's stuff going on, you know? There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because I did not rate The Bone Hunters as highly as people were expecting, I got so many messages being like, you're not ready to finish the series. You better, like, do X, Y, Z.
We know that feeling very well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we've gotten those messages.
It's like, it's hard. You know, you put yourself out there, and so you have to accept it. But somebody's harder than others.
Yeah.
100%. You know, there's, you know, the community's got good parts, bad parts. One of the worst parts about this community for a long time is I think the prevailing opinion of like, well, AJ, if you didn't like the book, it's because you're an idiot and you didn't So it's a genius thing that you just didn't understand, you know?
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I rated it 4 stars. So.
4 out of 5 and people were still pissed?
Oh, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Really mad.
I think there's just a large community that just feels like a not insignificant minority of the Malazan fandom that believes these are perfect books, every word, and that
also when I'm reviewing books, I'm very careful to
say, like, I just say about my experience and my personal preferences. Mm-hmm. And I'm never like, this book is bad. And if you like it and you think it's perfect, then you're stupid. Like, I'm just like, nah, I like this in my books and it did this. So it didn't work that well for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, let's get the show back on trickety track. Josh, this is a question for you.
Okay.
Well, we can keep hanging out in the...
No, that's good. You just said trickety track.
No, I love
that's...
getting back on trickety track.
You know, that's a phrase. The kids are saying it. It's like...
Okay. Nope.
It's
nope.
Lit.
yeet. Josh, let me yeet this question to you.
Okay.
From the elder god Draconis. I think... You had a best thing you've ever read almost every episode this book. Now the book is over. Do you have a definitive one?
I'll start by saying I'm a hyperbolic man. And so I'm going to say it's the best thing I've ever read pretty much every episode from till I die. So get ready for that.
So it's a meaningless compliment is what you're saying.
It is. If I ever, like, if someone made me something and I told them it's the best thing I've ever eaten, I'm lying to their face. But that is how my brain works. I will say that without thinking. Sorry. I don't know if I have a best thing in this book because I feel like a lot of what I liked were whole storylines. Maybe it's Tehole and Bug at the end and Bug not having wiped Tehole's memory. I really, really loved that. Because I fully expected Bug to be like, go back into Elder God mode and kind of just be like, well, this was a fun side story in my endless saga of a life and just kind of move on. But I really liked that he was like, nah, I'll stick here a bit longer. I thought it was really nice.
He's chilling out.
Mm-hmm.
Inge, do you think you're cold iron or hot iron?
God damn it.
Oh my God.
That's a really good question. I would have to say hot iron. You know,
really?
Not intentionally,
for sure.
But
for sure.
I'm a reactive gal.
I'd like to think I'm cold. I'm definitely hot. I got no question.
I know.
About
I wish I was cold.
Me too.
You know? But here's a more serious question. They both come in from Arkham.
From who?
I don't know. Arkham? I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Inch, do you think knowing Troll's eventual fate as revealed in book 4 affected your reading of his storyline in book 5?
Yeah, mostly because I just the whole time was like, is it going to be now? Is it going to be now? Is it going to be now? Is it going to be because of this? And it never came. So at the end, I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit salty about it because I thought I was going to find out. But other than that, it didn't affect it at all.
Aj, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, I obviously, I think it's impossible to come into this book and that not affect your read of it. Cause like we end House of Chains and Trell's like, and here's my story. And then like, you know, you start Midnight Tides, you're like, okay, this is going to be about Trell. And I don't think we see Trell for a little bit. I think we start off with.
He's the opening of chapter one. What are you talking about?
Is he the opening chapter?
Yeah, he's running.
He's watching. He's like, I just saw the seals be killed.
That's right. I forgot. And I guess that's such a different Troll than the Troll we end up with in House of Chains.
Like, he was a younger man. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I think I do still think it's impossible to not have that affect your read. But I don't know. India, I think I come off the opposite. I was kind of not glad, but like pleasantly surprised that we didn't get like the specific event that leads to Troll's shorning. Like, I think getting this setup of like who Troll is and his relationship with his family and like, you know, all of this stuff sets enough of a groundwork that you can kind of fill in the blanks yourself. And I did go back and read a bit of the House of Chains prologue, and it says Rulad basically says that the Lether people, I guess, are like equal to him or something. And that was what gets him shorned. I don't know. But again, the specifics, I don't think really matter to me. So.
I just like to know what's going on. I just like to know.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair.
Well, I just like straight up forgot that he was. I mean, I knew in the back of my mind, but I get so wrapped up in like what I'm reading in the moment that I like was never thinking about him specifically in House of Chains or like what got him there. I was just like, what's going on right now? So I don't think it affected my reading that much.
Damn. All right, well, egg on my face, I guess. Yeah, I mean, the story definitely does become way more about other people than Troll, right? Like, which I was also really pleasantly surprised by because I thought like we were going to get a really Troll heavy book, and like it's about, you know, the Sengars and stuff, but there's so much that happens in this book that is not about Trull.
Two sets of which three brothers. I think
is really
well, that's
good.
What I remember sort of thinking, like, I thought this was all of Trull's story, and so I was kind of surprised mm-hmm. when it wasn't right away, which I was fine with it. Mm-hmm. I was glad it wasn't just his story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's actually going to do it in for us on listener questions. And I want to clarify, because we got some others that I've omitted. We're not answering right now. Got a zing, got a zoom. Because I think there's a chance, Aj, you're the producer here, that we're going to put out a little, like, mm-hmm. maybe just a little halfway Q&A retrospective, talk about looking into the second half of the series.
Yeah, Pete and I had talked about that. Josh and India, I don't think we've actually broached that subject with you yet.
No, this is news.
On air, baby!
This is the second podcast in a row Pete has dropped some big change on to how we're doing the programming.
I think, but I do think that, like, doing a kind of halfway check-in would be a good thing for us to do. So are you saying you're saving questions
saving
for that?
Saving a few questions for that. Saving a few cues. Keeping them in the back pocket.
Sure.
Why do you do that? Neat. That vocal raise, the back pocket. Who are you trying to be?
Jeez, Josh.
You're doing this cool cat voice today.
He's trying to keep the energy high, dude. It's like 11 o'clock at night.
That's true.
Josh has been bullying me now on the show. I was gonna ask about Brother Zone, but I guess let's kick it off. Anyone can go first. Favorite brother, Sengar or Bedic? You're only getting one.
Oh, that's tough. I was gonna ask that. Okay, think, well, let's get some out that aren't it. Fear.
Benedus.
Yeah.
Oh, Benedus. Yeah, he was out for a bit. That makes him actually. That raises him a bit for me.
Better than Fear.
Yeah, I don't. Hall is a hard no for me. Mm. I don't know about anybody else. Like, there's only so much sad that you can be before, in a book, I need you to be not sad. And he was getting close, and then he got stabbed in the throat, and so that kind of cuts your character development short.
All right, someone's got to choose. It's not me.
All right. Yeah, Brittany.
I was just going to say, I think Trull and Rulad, like, I know you shouldn't say Rulad because he's not a good guy, but he's by far the most interesting.
Agreed.
Storyline. Mm-hmm. I tend to like the bad characters in books anyways. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, I guess, I don't want to say that because I don't want to spoil anything, but I want to know more. I always want to know more about him, but also I can't choose the one without the other, because Trull's love for him and, like, wanting to save him and help him, and how hurt he was by what happened to him when he first died, the whole relationship they had with one another, it wasn't all good or all bad. I don't know. I loved that. Mm-hmm. I think that was, like, the highlight.
Yeah, that dynamic.
To me. Yeah.
I think for me, until the last couple chapters, I mean, I was a Tahol stan, and I am till I die. But I really think that Breeze fucking just captured me in the palm of his hand in the throne room scene. And I would love to know. I want more of him. Unfortunately, I think he's going to be an undead sea guardian or something. I don't really know yet. But I think it may have shifted to Breeze just slightly.
Yeah, I think, Brittany, I'm in that same boat with you, where, like, Rulad's story is the most interesting, but I don't think I would say he's my favorite brother. Mm-hmm. I do think Josh Breeze, I think, is my favorite brother. And I think throughout, like, the second half of the book, he really took that spot from Trull in my heart, I guess. And I do feel like his whole storyline was kind of cut short, because, like, all the stuff with him being able to, like, read the tiles and, like, you know, he has this, like, deeper connection with, I guess, you know, the Holds or Warrens or whatever it is that we just didn't get to explore, because now he's going to be an undead sea guy.
Yeah. Or something else. We don't know.
Or something else. That's true. Yeah. Featherwitch does have them fingies.
Oh, I forgot she got. Oh, the hell's like fingies.
Sorry. So I think I'm going to have to say Breeze came out on top for me. And I think Trull is still a close second, but...
India, who you got?
I agree with AJ and Brittany that Rulad is definitely the most interesting. But in just in terms of my enjoyment of the book overall, I'm probably going to have to say Tae-hol because he's hilarious, and I enjoyed those parts of the book the best.
I love Tae-hol.
I feel like Tae-hol's emotional payoff is really good too. Like, we spend the whole time being like really goofy and light and all this stuff, and then once Bug reveals himself as male, then we get kind of like a kind of sincere side, you know, which I thought was a nice shift.
Love it.
No, I agree with Brittany. I mean, I think it's kind of obvious Rulad's like the most interesting character in the book. And well, that's a big statement. A very interesting character, you know, but you know what I mean. And for me, he's the most interesting by far. And I do get kind of pairing Miss Troll. But for me, it's not even a choice. Here's my official statement. Would choose every Sengar brother over any Benedict brother.
Really?
You're choosing Benedict over any of them. See you. You know?
Can you give me your top three character traits of Benedict?
Sure.
I'll even settle for two.
Sure. He is quiet. He is in touch. He's in touch with magic, and to me, he seems to have a soft side to him. So,
yeah. Well, but Pete, you were the one that said you have to pick one,
and I picked one, and I'm picking Benedict.
You're picking Benedict as your favorite.
Your overall, wow.
No,
okay.
No, I'm picking Rulad, but I'm just saying, okay. If I had to create a brothers tier list, all four Sengars are above all three Benedicts. You know.
Wow.
Anywho's. An official opinion, I think Tae-hol's the least favorite. I said it. We gotta keep moving though.
I do think the Sengar like storyline as opposed to the Benedict storyline is better. But I also think that's just because like Hull doesn't really do much after what chapter like 12 or something, and then he shows back up in chapter 20.
One of the brothers just kind of vanishing and not being part of the fucking story. Right, Pete?
Well, but to be fair, Steve did tell us it was a story of two stories of three brothers, and so Benedict isn't counted in that count.
But I also think the Eater storyline is so much more about the brothers and their domestic drama, like, colliding with each other, as opposed to the Benedict stuff, which is, like, they're so, like, to the wind, you know?
Yeah.
It's true.
Plus, we get that really good scene where they're all laughing over the wine. Ugh, God.
That scene ripped my heart out. Heartbreaking.
I remained unaffected.
Okay.
We get it, Inge.
Heart of stone, India.
Can't penetrate.
I think this had a lot of sadness, this whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I guess we're at the end of the show, or the end of
We do, like, final thoughts and stuff?
It's time to go big. Time to go big, baby.
Okay.
What?
We're going big.
Big picture thoughts?
Picture thoughts.
Jeez Louise. We're going big.
Sorry, I should lower my voice. Is this better for you, Josh? Big picture thoughts.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really good.
I don't want to tune it up too much or give you the wrong impression or anything.
Thank you.
All right, Inge.
No, I'm not going first.
You're going second, all right?
Fine.
Okay.
And you're gonna like it.
Are we doing our ranking here as well?
No, let's do that later. Just let's talk big picture thoughts. Midnight Tides, Aj, you connected with Troll so much in House of Chains.
I did.
What did you make your sad boy in this book and the greater story of what's going on in Letharith?
I didn't connect with Troll as much as I did in House of Chains, which I guess maybe says a lot about how sad I am. I did connect more with Troll, I think, in certain scenes and stuff. But I think a lot of that was just because he was playing the dynamic of like a brother and not because of Troll's character specifically. I definitely wasn't like in those scenes where I was like really feeling for Troll. I don't think I was carrying over any feelings from my House of Chains feelings about Troll, which were very high. But I do think, like, overall, this book told a really great story, and I am the youngest of four siblings, so I felt a lot every time we were talking about Rulad and, like, his relationship with his older siblings and stuff. So I think in some levels, this was the most, like, emotionally affecting. Definitely didn't make me, like, cry the most. That's still the end of Memories of Ice still has that... I guess holds that medal or whatever. But there was definitely a lot of times in this book where I was just like, ugh, I just like felt like I was like hit in the stomach just through all like the sibling dynamics stuff. So it's just a really great book, really great battle scenes as well. And yeah, I don't know. It's just the being a self-contained story, but with the context of the rest of the other books, I think really made this a clear, like, strong entry in this series. That's what I got. So are you going to say anything, or are we just going to move right to India? All right, India, what do you think? Because Pete won't stop smiling at me.
I'm like, what do we do now?
Brittany, this is every time.
I was trying to stare daggers at India to make her, you know, I thought it was going to work.
It didn't. You looked
Peter,
like...
You can't... Like, how do we know whose turn it is?
Yeah, that's not how these meets work.
Yeah, we're all looking at
this. You can't be directional with the webcams.
India, what'd you think of this book?
It was towards you,
Inge. Okay. Big thoughts. So, goes without saying that each one of these books presents a new challenge for me every time I read them, which I think makes it a little bit harder for me to connect to the characters like you guys seem to be able to, because I'm so stuck in trying to understand what the fuck is going on. So, this book, I think, was definitely easier to follow than the others. I think the story was pretty interesting. It lacked the kind of love interest that you know that I enjoy that some of them have, like really small parts that I get to hold on to and enjoy. So it didn't have that, but that was okay because the story itself wasn't, it just wasn't as like tricksy as I feel like they usually are, where I need to I did need to pay attention to things, but it wasn't as difficult, I guess. So in that way, I think I really liked it. Any other thoughts? The story itself, I think, was pretty good. I more enjoyed reading this book than the other books. Like, I would say, I think in the episodes, like, oh, I think this is pretty good. Or I really liked this, and that was different than the other books as well. I would say, what else? I think that's pretty much it for me. I think I overall thought it was pretty good. Still not as easy to follow as my usual book that I would read, but definitely easier. So if you're diving into it for the first time, you know, I kind of get why somebody might read this one first. Going back to that conversation. Mm. But yeah, so that's it for me.
Nice.
Brett, you said you read the book in November, but looking back on it now, a little hindsight in the rearview mirror, what do you make of it?
Definitely the more time that has passed, the more like fondly that I remember this book. So I like it better now. Just, I think it like takes a bit to settle with you almost. And I definitely thrive with these more contained stories. I like that better. I'm a very character-driven reader. So if I have characters to cling to, so I really enjoyed this book. I think that this is the book where just a lot of, I love Stephen Erickson's writing style so much. So there were so many quotes that just really spoke to me from this book specifically. And a lot of things that I felt like he was relating to like real world experiences, whether that's like the human experience or wars or greed or just different things like that, that I thought stood out to me so much more in this particular book compared to the others. And then I guess what's probably strange is for me, like I didn't care as much about the Lothari and the Tiss Eater, like the fight between them. It was more like certain characters that I latched onto. So like Udonath and Featherwitch, I loved those characters, and Saren was a favorite character of mine. And then like Shirk and Kettle, those are like the highlights for me of this story. Obviously Troll and Rulad, but just other Canary characters that I connected to or related to in certain points stood out to me a lot in this book. So yeah, I really love this one. I want more like this in the series. We're not going to get more like this in the series, but...
I'm derailing a bit. Saren's a favorite character. I love Saren. Like, what,
people always want to talk about Saren.
I'm always good to talk about Saren. Like, you know, what makes you love Saren?
Just everything about her personality, and then this is kind of hard because I know you guys probably don't want to bring it up in this show again, but with what happens with her, and I think if I remember correctly from the discussion, I don't think you guys were too fond of what happened with her and her memories, but so just like relating to personal experience as somebody who's been like abused and assaulted, my biggest takeaway from this book is probably her conversations of being able to have her memories not specifically taken away, but to where she's like emotionally dealt with them and doesn't have to like live with that pain specifically anymore. And after that, I was just like, this is what speaks to me the most out of this whole section of the book. And then the ending where wherever they're going, like, I just want more. I want to know what they're doing. I want to follow them.
No, I'm just thinking. Thanks for sharing.
I was like, is that bad?
No, it's not bad.
It's great.
Josh.
Yeah,
Josh,
my turn?
You're a big picture, baby.
We're just going to slide right back in.
Yeah. I really like this book as kind of it's very antithetical to why I liked Memories of Ice, because I feel like Memories of Ice is a really, really great case study of like three quarters of the book leading to super climactic last quarter of the book. And I mean, I think it's just the perfect example of that. And like the climaxes are like your standard fantasy battles. And I think that's awesome. In this book, he does the opposite. Every battle is over in 6 pages. And they're brutal, and they're much more like in a world where like there is magic that can do what magic does in this, then yes, this is what battles can look like sometimes. And it's really very, very different to how it's portrayed in Memories of Ice. And I really like that that you know, we're not using the same, very similar to how the last book went, where like it was supposed to be 3/4 of the book leading to one battle and the battle didn't happen. Now we're seeing, no, the battles happen. They're horrendous. And you don't want to think about it too long. I really liked it because this book did not feel, unlike the last couple, I feel like it didn't feel as much like a train building up momentum into the end. It just kind of felt like a very steady pace for me. I didn't feel like it ramped up as much. And I really liked it. I thought it was a very interesting like pace for me then.
I will,
Pete, what are your
say,
big picture thoughts?
I was thinking about a response. So I have a response to what Brittany said, but we'll get to it eventually. I can't do it right now. Let's like get through this thing, you know?
Okay.
I just, you know, I was like, you know. So Josh, that was a great opinion. I loved it. I listened to it very deeply.
Okay.
I'm just sorry.
I really relate to what you just said too.
I feel a little bad. Anyway, I talked about it a bit on the spoiler cast, and, I talked about it a bit earlier on this. I think I really loved the book the first time I read it, and I think I liked it a little less this time. Not that I think, like, I still think it's an awesome book, hands down. You know, I think I don't need to keep extolling it. But I think it's one of those books that, like, I don't know. I think it's like when I reread Memories of Ice, a book I loved the first time through. I think I've been enjoying rereading the books I kind of didn't like the first time through, or I liked less. Do you know what I mean? Like, I already basically thought this was a good book. I read it and was like, you know, good book. Good job, Steve. You know, like I didn't come away. I feel like it kind of confirmed a lot of the things I already thought about this book. I discovered a few new layers, but like I had such a 100% difference rereading Guardians of the Moon or House of Chains, one of these types of books. So, you know, I thought I enjoyed the book, still enjoy the book. You know, I talked more about it in the spoiler cast. That's about all I have to say. Now let's take a big breath and do a quick, let's do a quick little five ranking, you know? I'm going to quick go first, you know?
Oh, I have to think about that.
I'm ready.
All right, if you're ready, you go. I'm actually not ready to go first.
I'll go first because...
I know. Fine.
Well, I was going to say, I'll go first because I haven't read all 5.
Right.
So I'm currently, I guess, to promote future material, I'm reading the first 2 books right now. And Pete and I will talk about it in one big show within the next, I don't know, little month or so, probably. But currently, I think my rating goes 3, 5, 4. So I think it's Memories of Ice, Midnight Tides, House of Chains.
What did we just read?
We just read Midnight Tides. 5.
I'm ready. I'm putting this on top. I'm putting Memories 2nd. I'm putting Dead House Gates 3rd. I'm putting House of Chains 4th and Gardens last, I think.
Want me to go?
Yes.
Yeah, if you have it, go.
House of Chains is my favorite. Then Memories of Ice. Then Midnight Tides. Then Dead House Gates. And then Gardens of the Moon. And I won't say we're bone hunters, right?
That's crazy. Yeah,
I almost want to hear the House of Chains takes. Like, I'm going to the YouTube after this. I got to hear the House of Chains takes.
Yeah, we were pretty lukewarm on it overall. Yeah. Looking back, I think it was way better than I gave it credit for. I think
Lay down the take. I'm here. I'm here for it.
It's Felicin. Everything that wrapped, it was because I was invested in these characters from Dead House Gates, which I did not love. I liked Gardens of the Moon better than Dead House Gates originally, but thinking back, that changed. So between Felicin and Tavor and their whole story, I also loved following just Carsa Orlong for a bit in the beginning. Like, I loved being with one character that, like, was superb for me. And then I loved where the rest of the, I was, like, devastated by that book.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that Felicin Tavor storyline is definitely all time. Like, that's that, I love that storyline. And the payoff is extremely good as well.
I get lost in, like I love Memories of Ice, but the grand scale of things and how big certain battles can be, or following different people and perspectives, like, I get lost in that. I don't personally love reading battles or combat type of situations. It's kind of boring for me a little bit sometimes, even if it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely.
Indy, you have your rating?
Yeah, I guess. So... I think mine would also be, I think we might have the same order, Brittany, but I'm not sure. House of Chains, Memories of Ice, Midnight Tides, Dead House Gates, Gardens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, India, do you feel like, are your reasons for House of Chains being number one the same?
Essentially, yeah. I loved it. I was so invested in Felicin's story.
Yeah. I know. I know you're a Felicin head.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I really loved that one. Memories was just fantastic, though. Memories of Ice was so good. And then Midnight Tides was pretty good, too. And then Dead House Gates was kind of boring. And then Gardens was, don't ask me anything.
Yeah,
about
India,
it.
I just read chapter two of Gardens of the Moon, and how you kept going after that. Like, I know what's happening because, like, I know all these words, but there's some shit that happens in chapter two where it's like, here's a paragraph of just all nonsense words. And I'm like,
I was so upset for the first, like, two seasons of this podcast.
I think what's weird, too, is, like, Stephen Erickson made me hate Gleason so much in Dead House Gates at certain times. Like, and yes. I don't know, when you go on that, like, emotional roller coaster with a character where you're like, I can't stand them, they're detestable, and then you want them to be happy,
right? Yeah
I love Felicin, and anyone who tries to impeach her is like, I just don't. I'm just saying, there's a bunch of people who like don't like her character and like are actively Felicin like detractors, and like same thing with people who take away from the Mibe, do not understand it at all, you know. Anyway, listen, I got a hot take for you. The thing is this, a lot of the days, books like Memories of Ice and Midnight Tides are at the top of the list, because I feel like if I sat down and I thought about what book I'd actually want to reread, do you know what I mean? I think I'm probably going to reread Memories of Ice. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I sit down, I'm probably going to reread one of this. I'm going to reread Midnight Tides. These books are, I think, kind of fun. They're self-contained stories in a lot of ways. They have a big fantasy adventure at the heart of it. I mean, something I really like. Do you know what I mean? Like, Memories of Ice, you know, it's like, we're doing it, you know? But here's my list today. Here's how I'm feeling today. Feeling a little frisky tonight. I got House of Chains number one. And then I'm doing number two, Dead House Gates. Then I'm doing number three, Gardens of the Moon. Then I'm doing number four.
You're a fucking monster.
Then I'm doing number four, Memories of Ice. And then number five, Midnight Tides.
You're right.
Damn.
I just feel like this is the list of books that, like, I feel like it's like Otis just saying, like, if I reread Midnight Tides outside of having a fun time, I just don't know what else I'd get out of it. Do you mean? I feel like if I reread House of Chains, I'm going to have, like, I don't like that book pretty much, you know, but I think I'd rather reread it than a book I, like, I don't know, just feeling frisky tonight.
So you were answering a different question. The question you gave us was, what are your favorite books? And then you said, here's the order in which I think I'd get the most out of rereading them again, which is a different question.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about the Bone Hunters, is I rank it last, but it's what I would want to reread the most because it just
interesting. That's an interesting take.
That does not rank bode last? Well for this next season.
Yeah. You guys will love it. It's wonderful.
That's one of those things. But Brittany, I was surprised, despite my insane list here, Brittany, I was surprised when you said House of Chains is your favorite thus far. I mean, I feel like that's like, it's a minority opinion, and that's what I love hearing about people's different takes on these things, because everyone, I feel like, has a different, in a long series like this, everyone ends up with different books that, like, really speak to them in some way, and it's like, you know, that's what I'm here for. You know, you're here for the, you know, here for different thoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anywho's,
I have some open questions for Brittany.
We got nothing going on, you know.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that Brittany has nothing going on.
No, it's going to work out after this. It's fine.
I was wondering how you selected these books to start with. Like, were you already interested in fantasy, or was it recommended to you?
Yeah, I have been reading fantasy for a long time, and I like a challenge. So everybody was like, those books are too hard to read. And I was like, they're not going to be too hard to read. I'm going to read them. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of hard. But it was like something that a lot of people on BookTube had talked about and said, like, okay, I don't really want to pick these up because it seems like too much to invest your time in. But sometimes I like light, fluffy things to read that don't take too much thinking, but most of the time, like, I want to have to really, really think about what's going on. So I guess that's how I originally chose them.
Cool. Yeah. So you enjoy reading them. You're enjoying.
Yeah. You know what? It's a very frustrating process. And I think I said in one of my videos that it feels like running a marathon sometimes. Like, when you're running the marathon, the whole thing sucks. And it doesn't suck reading it, but the payoff is good. So it's like kind of similar to me. I get really frustrated because I'm like, how can I seriously not remember or like make these connections? But I also read a ton of books too, so I try not to be too hard on myself, but I definitely, definitely enjoy them and they have a really good payoff, but I do get frustrated. I won't lie. Because some people, it just like clicks with them and I feel like they understand it a lot easier than I do.
Same. yeah. Okay. I was just interested in hearing your perspective on that because I don't hear a lot of other perspectives, just us. So.
Yeah, and I'm reading every other month. One month I'm reading a Malazan book, and the next month I'm reading a Wheel of Time.
You're really on the journey then.
That's a dosage.
Yeah. Wheel of Time is so much easier. Wheel of Time is like a piece of cake to understand, though, compared to Malazan. So it's not.
I've never read. I've heard it described as excruciatingly boring for a very long time.
I'm on the eighth book right now, Path of Daggers, and I would currently rate it 2 stars.
That is about, like, I've heard people say you gotta get to book 8, and that's a sentence that just, like, hurts me.
I feel like I read 5 of them, and then you know more than us, Brent, but, like, my understanding is there's, like, a lull in the middle, a slog, something like this.
But it goes from 7, 8, 9, and 10, I think, so there's 4 books in the slog, they call it. And so I'm like, that's a lot of words to not, but I guess the payoff at the end is good, so we'll see.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm pretty suspicious about sometimes, you know? That to me feels like people will do that with video games sometimes.
And yeah, that's what I was like.
I cannot trust them at all. It's like, well, you got to play the first 30 hours and then the game really opens up.
Yeah.
That's what
it's like. What do you think I got going on with my life? Do you know what I mean?
Here's the blasphemy, I guess. I'm not a Brandon Sanderson fan. I think he's the writes good books, but he's not a favorite of mine and people hate me for it. He finished the series. And so I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is going to be good.
Yeah, he wrote what? Was it just the last book or was it the last?
The last couple, I think.
3? At most 3. But I'm not 100%.
And I wasn't like super in the fantasy game until we started reading Malazan. And I wouldn't really even still say I'm super in the fantasy game. But Wheel of Time started in like the 90s, right?
Oh, or
like the
80s?
Like a while ago.
It did say 1990. I just Googled it.
It's way old, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, and then that's wild.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's you know, I guess part of the premise of the show in the way. I feel like a lot of the way I conceive of these books is in relationship to books like The Stormlight Archives, like Wheel of Time, like A Song of Ice and Fire. Do you mean... Because it's like so much trying, it's like a, I don't know, it's like, you know, we're also doing the epic fantasy, huge series, these things, you know, so I don't know, it's kind of interesting, I don't know, but
it's very
anyway.
Postmodern, Pete.
very postmodern. Thank you, AJ.
Sorry.
Yeah. AJ, you can cut it from the show. Don't leave it in the show. I agree, Brittany. Brandon Sanderson, a bit overrated. This is my official opinion. You know, some people on the internet, a little too, you know. I don't think it's the worst thing ever. Just, you know.
I'll die on that hill. He's very, is this a thing we can or cannot? Like vanilla, like bland, like kind of boring. Like,
fucking preach.
Pleasing to a lot of people. Like, I want dinosaurs with sword hands in my books. You know what I mean? Like, I want messed up stuff.
I'm feeling the vibe. And like, this, like, listen, I obviously have critiqued the series sometimes, you know, but like, for all its flaws, I feel it has, like, you cannot say it's vanilla shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, we are out here on Steve Island and you cannot deny it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's, and like, I would rather be 100% in like, we're doing the weird shit tank than like, I don't know, man, just sometimes, you know, you get it. You get it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, as you mentioned, I don't know if we really want to get into the whole thing, but you know, AJ can cut it from the show if you want. But to respond to, you know, 30 minutes ago, whenever this came up. Yeah, I think we had a longer conversation about the assault itself, I think. And then our conversation about that scene, in my memory, I think there was a lot of mixed interpretations about whether the scene was about erasing her memory or like, and whether that meant we were trying to like sidestep dealing with trauma and the actual issue. Do you mean? Which I think I in my memory, I don't believe that's what the scene's about. And I think there was a miscommunication all around on the show, because I don't think that's what happens in the book.
I think, Pete, I land, and Brittany, where you guys did, where it's like she was able to process all of these feelings and they're still there, but she's able to like, you know, continue with her life, with these things still, you know, having happened to her and her having, you know, dealt with it. But it is kind of like she's able to move forward.
Like, it's about processing, not erasure. Yes.
I just like that conversation in general, just because, as I said, it's something in my life where I have thought a million times. I've been through a lot of very traumatic things that have caused a lot of issues in my life. And I think often, like, would you go back and take it out of your life if you could? And like, the answer I settled on is no, I would not, because I like who I am. But I love any conversation around that, whether it's like right for a character to do it or not. Like, I just like that topic being explored, I think, to see like the consequences or the benefits of it.
Yeah.
Interesting to hear your point of view.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Truly. That sounded a little facetious. I didn't mean for it to come off like that. No,
but
truly, thank you.
It's because you raised your voice, you know. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us today on the show. I'd like to thank Brittany for coming on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, you should watch her YouTube videos. They're in our description. They're at Books with Brittany. She talked to Steve. You can watch her talk to Steve with faces, like on the video, you know, face videos.
She also talks about books that aren't Malazan.
I've never heard of them, AJ. So, hey, we're wrapping up. We're obviously, this is our last Midnight Tides episode, so we're going to read The Bone Hunters, but it's going to take like a hot sec to get there. Not like a super hot sec, but a little bit longer than our normal off season, because AJ mentioned earlier in the show, AJ is going to be reading both Gardens of the Moon and Dead House Gates in prep for going into the second half of the series now that AJ's on the show full time. So we just want to give a little bit more space for them to read the two books. So our off season will probably be a little bit longer. I'd have to check the schedule. We're shooting to start Bone Hunters in early April. We have shows out most weeks, I think, is on the schedule. We'll tweet it. It'll be in the show. Next week is a spoiler cast, and then we roll into it. And then we're talking to Steve, of course, about Midnight Tides at the end of this whole thing. So with that all out of the way, let us know what you think of the show at 10 Very Big Books, Twitter, Gmail. Thanks again for coming on the show, Brittany.
Thank you.
And I guess goodbye to my other co-hosts.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Brittany.
Yeah, thanks, Brittany.
Glad to be here. It was fun.
Hey.
Hello, everybody. Producer AJ here, and I just ate some very good salmon. Thank you so much for listening to the Midnight Tides mailbag episode, and an extra special thanks to Books with Brittany for agreeing to come on the show. If you want to check out Brittany's YouTube channel, which you totally should, you can head on over to youtube.com/bookswithbrittany or follow the link in our show notes. Thank you as well to everyone who submitted their questions and comments for this episode. Like Peter said, we didn't get to all of them, but pretty soon we'll be doing some sort of what we've been calling a halfway Q&A with the four of us, so some of your questions will be used there as well. More info about that in the coming weeks, so please keep an eye on our Twitter at 10VeryBigBooks. Also, if you'd like to give us your thoughts or feelings about this or any of our episodes, you can always email us 10VeryBigBooks@gmail.com, or you can head on over to our Discord, bit.ly/VBBDiscord. That's capital V, capital B, capital B, capital D, Discord. That link will also be in the show notes. Of course, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons over on our Patreon. If you'd like to contribute to the show, you can head to patreon.com/10VeryBigBooks. That link will also be in the show notes. And also keep in mind, we won't be reading new patron names on air in the off season, so be ready for a super list in the first episode of Book 6. And as always, thank you so very much to Dan Geserich for making our spectacular logo. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Geserich for a tweet for Lurie. And of course, the wonderful music in today's episode is by the one and only Amaranthine from their album The New Romantic, which you can find along with Simulant Rain and their other music on bandcamp.com. Links to their pages will be in the show notes, and 10 Very Big Books will be back next week on March 5th with the Midnight Tides spoiler cast with two very special guests, the Counselor of Moonspawn and Ruthann Bad. We're extremely excited to have them on the show. I'll talk to you then, and thank you so much for listening.